And should just note as a little bit of an introduction, and it's truly relevant also to Hanukkah, but on the surface, you know, who is the third Aliyah about? You know, who does it tell us about? And who does it shed a very positive light on? So if I were to ask you, who's the Aliyah really giving a great credit to? I would assume you would say Yosef. Yosef seems to be very much reflected on positively by this Aliyah, and that's true. But it's also important to note that some of the commentaries emphasize, and some of the later Sfarim have a lot to say about, it's also very reflective of the character of Paro. And there's a lot to figure out about whether the Paro of Bereishis and the Paro of Shmos are the same. We know the discussion about the Parsha Shmos and Vayakam al Chadash or Shirley Yada as Yosef. Was he literally Chadash or was he just Neschadish because they Rosev and he pretended he didn't know Yosef? So the question of where the line is drawn between the Paro we read about here and the Paro that we read about in Sefer Shmos is a significant one, but especially because they really do seem to be different people, not just different human beings, but of a completely different character. And the Paro that we read about in these Parshios, and particularly in this Aliyah, in terms of the citations, the quotations that are attributed to Paro here, reflect something very positive about him, reflect that he had a refined sensitivity and appreciation for qualities that deserve to be appreciated. The fact that he was able to recognize what he did in Yosef says something about his character. And this is something that's discussed, for example, Reb Simcha Zussel Breud in his Sefer Slom Derech, and others talk about that there's a spiritual sensitivity and a refinement that we see reflected in this Paro. And there's some midrashim that suggest that even if he is the same Paro who was depicted in Sefer Shmos, it's because he was kind of overthrown by the people, and at first he didn't want to have any negative relationship with the Jews, but they imposed their will upon him, and they basically put him through the ringer until he was put back into power in a very changed way. But one way or another, there's just huge differences between the Paro that we read about in Shmos and the Paro that we read about here. And the Paro that we read about here is one that gives us a lot to admire, with his ability to recognize Yosef's spiritual qualities. That is something which could easily have been lost on a lesser person. And it's not a given that everyone is able to appreciate that, that we know. And those of you who read was in the Hanukkah to go, so I won't go into the details of it now, but I published a Dvar Torah there related to this week's Parsha and to Hanukkah, drawing from details in the first Aliyah of Parshas Miketz, but making the point that before we come to anything else, kind of as a prerequisite to all of Torah, we need to have the ability to appreciate greatness. And what we can appreciate, what we are aware of, what we can be cognizant of, is a crucial prerequisite to anything else having any other kind of impact. We can't appreciate Torah if we're not the type of people who know how to appreciate greatness. And the greatest gift in the world, and anything, no matter how wonderful, can be lost and not noticed if the people around are not able to appreciate what's there, not able to see what's in front of them. So there's a lot to say about that, and there's a lot that is said about that, but just the fact that Paro makes the comments that he makes in these opening psukim, and makes the appointment that he makes the actions, takes the actions that he does in recognition of Yosef's characteristics, is something that is very significant to take note of, both because of what it says about Yosef, but also because of what it says about Paro. So the first pasuk begins, Vayomer Paro el Yosef, Achrei hodia Elokim oscha es kol zos, ein navon v'chacham kamocha. So after he has shown, after God has told you all this, what is all this that you see in the Mefarshim, they have different interpretations, whether it means this dream, even though he has yet to see that it's going to come true, but the fact that it rings true with him and his associates, or maybe he was also filled in about what had happened before with the other dreams he interpreted. So maybe that's what it means, kolzos, but one way or another. So Paro is impressed with his interpretive abilities. So it must be there's no Navon and Chacham like you. So saying that there's nobody like you, and Rashi writes, Lo Nimsa Kamocha, they're just not going to be found anywhere else, anybody on your level. So there's a number of ways to identify what it is that Paro was so impressed with. On a surface level, it's the fact that he was able to tell what these dreams meant. The Beis HaLevi points to the fact that since Yosef explicitly says that it's not from me, it's from God, so that's where his true wisdom is displayed. Anyone can be smart, perhaps, but to recognize that your intelligence and that your wisdom comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam and that he is above you. So if that's the case, Paro is going to realize, oh, you have this awareness, so then, indeed, there is no Navon and Chacham like you. The Maritz, Yosef Dushinsky, comments also that normally when you have somebody who's smart, and this is a big stumbling block for people who are highly intelligent, so very often people who are smart, they want to make sure that everyone knows how smart they are. This is something that very often comes along with high intelligence. And here we see that Yosef has been around for such a long time and hasn't made any effort to make sure everyone is aware of his intelligence. So that itself is impressive. So the fact that I didn't know till now, and the fact that now we have to learn what's going on with you, that perhaps is what's reflective of your tremendous wisdom. So the coupling of the phrase here, Navon v'chacham, so you are someone who's understanding, and you're someone who is wise, and somebody who is knowledgeable. Rav Soloveitchik, in his drushes about this, emphasized that he's somebody who has both imagination and able to have vision, and also to translate it into fact, to translate it into a plan. And that is something which he was tremendously impressed with. So Pasuk continues to say what he's going to do. Atia al Besi, V'alpicha Yishak Kolami, Rak Hakisei Egdal Mimekah. So you are going to be on my household. You're going to be in charge of everything. There's Na'im Torah comments over here that Paro actually was giving Yosef three ministries, three things to be in charge of. That Tiel Basi, that refers to the finance ministry. And when he takes off his ring, that's the legislative authority is also being given to him, because in order to implement his plans, he's going to have to be able to make rules. And also, he's in charge of defense, because people might riot against him if he's going to make these policies. So, lo yarmisha siado, people aren't going to be able to overthrow you. You're going to be in charge of the defense also. So, Paro was putting him in charge of all of these different ministries. And what does it mean, al picha yishak kolami? How do you translate that?
Sustain.
So, that's the way Rashi understands it. And it sounds like that's what Unklus is saying. Unklus is saying yitzan. So, it sounds like from Mizonos. It sounds like it means to sustain, like you said. Rashi says yisparnes. The Radak translates the word a little differently. He understands it like klezayin. It means that people will be armed through you. It's perhaps consistent with this idea that there's also this defense role that Yosef is taking on. The Maritz, again, Rav Yosef Dushinsky, he understands it based on the Pasuk in Mishlei, which talks about kisvasayim yushak. So that phrase, which the Pasuk continues to apply to Meshuv Dvarim Nechochim, somebody who says the right answer, so it's like his lips, Yishak. So what does that mean? So Tosfos in Gittin explains that Pasuk to mean that people will be quiet, that they won't know what to say in front of you because you're going to be so impressive, you're going to be so powerful, so people are going to not have anything to say. So don't worry about them. You know that you're going to be able to convey your influence to people. When the Pasuk goes on to say, Rak HaKisei Egdal Mimekah, so the Sfas Emes explains that, you know, the Pashtus, the Pasuk is, that it's only the kisei, only the throne that is going to be above you, that you're going to have tremendous authority, but the authority is only going to stop short in front of my throne. But the Sfasamis explains that maybe there's an additional meaning here also, that Rak HaKisei Egdal, that the throne will become greater because of you. And that the same idea is true by the Ribono Shalom, that the Pasuk says, V'isim Rak Ramayla, and also Kedoshim to you, both Psukim, so Chazal have a drasha, that you should be lofty, but Rak, so the Gemara says, the Medrash says that Ani Lamala Mimchem, that Kadosh Baruch Hu is higher than you, or Kedoshim to you. The Pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, so Kedoshim to you, Ki Kadosh Ani, Chazal say that you should be holy, but Kedushasi Lamala Mikedushaschem. So you have that same kind of message that you're going to be very holy, you're going to be very lofty, but there's a stopping point that the king is higher. In those cases, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is higher. Here it's referring to Paro. But maybe Al Piderach HaDrosh, you could say in all of them, the whole notion of Kiddush Hashem, that through our loftiness and through our holiness, so the Shem Hashem is increased, is even higher, is even more lofty in the eyes of the world. And so too, he's saying to Yosef that the throne itself will be bigger because of what you do. And that's something that's going to have a tremendous impact. Okay, so the Yomer Parable Yosef, for Eina Satios Chal Kol Eretz Mitzrayim. So you see, I've placed you over all of the people. The Yosef Paro Es Tabato, Me'al Yado, Ve'yitein Oso Al Yad Yosef, Ve'al Beish Oso Al Big Dei Sheish, Ve'yosem Revit HaZav Al Tzavaro. So he took off his ring, and he, by doing that, he conveys the tremendous trust that he has in him, and he gives him this legislative authority, as we've noted before. It's always a little bit of a fun game to look through Sukkim, Parsha, Haftorah, otherwise, and see Sfarim titles that you notice. So this Aliyah happens to be very rich in Sfarim titles. There are many coming up. This Pasuk alone, so Big Dei Sheish, the Sefer Baba Basra, that title, Ravid Hazav, it's a commentary on Chumash. There's a lot of Sfarim names that you're going to see in this Aliyah, including next Pasuk also. But Yarkev Osob or Merkevis HaMishnah, Asher Lo, Vayukru Lefonav Avreich, Benasun Oso Al Kol Eretz Mitzrayim. So he gave him the ability to arrive in his chariot. So that's called Merkevis HaMishnah, second chariot, his vice chariot. So this is also an important Sefer title. This is the title of a very impressive commentary on the Rambam. It's a little funny because in Jewish folklore they tell stories about Chelm, as if Chelm was a place of non-intelligent people for some reason. But the Merkevis HaMishnah came from Chelm, and it was a Shlomo of Chelm. And if you spend any time reading the Merkevis HaMishnah, you will not doubt the intelligence of at least that citizen of Chelm. Certainly, yeah, certainly was not somebody who would be the topic of such jokes. It was quite an impressive statement. Yeah.
I was wondering if there was any place to compare and contrast the sort of taking of the tapa off
and
here and with Ahasuerus.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be the same idea, you know, that this probably is the same notion that he's conveying his...
But this is positive, whereas by Ahasuerus it's negative?
Or? Well, for us it was negative, but, you know, the idea of what's going on, of the king expressing his trust in someone and giving over his authority, is the same kind of thing. It was used negatively in Purim, but it certainly does represent the same kind of a gesture. Hi.
I just thought you were going to point out the other book title in that passage, the Mishnah. So.
Oh, the Mishnah, yes. That's right. Well, it's easy to miss, right? The Mishnah is also mentioned in this passage. And also all the Kollel students who are named Avreichim, based on this passage. So Avreich is meant to represent. It's a word, actually, the closest English equivalent would be a sophomore. Sophomore is a combination both of saf and mor, meaning wise and its opposite. So avreich means old and young, and it represents somebody who is somewhere in that process. So, you know, a kollel student is not a child, but he's also still in the process of his development. So that combination of coming from different directions. That's what's conveyed with this word. Okay, so he was put in charge of all of Mitzrayim. And like we said before, Parlo Yosef, Ani Faro, Uviladecha, Liyarim, Yishus Yado, Yasrag, Lobacholaris Mitzrayim. So nobody's going to be able to have anything to come up against you. No one's going to be able to lift up his hand against you. Which we know also, Yarim is Yado, it doesn't just mean they're going to hit you. So we know from other contexts in Halacha and in Chumash that it means even just to threaten. It means even to introduce the notion of violence into the equation. That's not going to be possible because your stature will be so absolute and so established that it's not going to make sense for anybody to try to challenge you. So here now we have some more Svarim titles. Vayikra Faro, Shem Yosef, Tzofnas Paneach, V'itin Lovas Asnas, Baspat Yifera, Kohen On, V'yishah, V'yitze Yosef, El Eretz Mitzrayim. So Tzofnas Paneach is the Rugged Shaver. So actually it's the title of apparently quite a few Svarim, I think on one of the, maybe it was a Svarim block somewhere recently on the internet, there was a long essay about many Sfarim with the title Tzofnas Paneach, but certainly the most well-known at this point in history is the Rugged Shaver, or Joseph Rosen, who is a unique Gaon. And it's a little bit ironic because the name is supposed to convey revealer of secrets. And that among Sfarim written in the past 100 years or so, the Tzofnas Paneach is definitely one of the hardest Sfarim to read. It's written in a extremely terse style, which maybe represents the Rugged Shaver's personality also. So you need to know a lot in order to be able to understand whatever he writes. And so the Sfarim that have been published, including the Sfarim on Chumash, the Tzofnas Paneach al Torah, was actually published by Yeshiva University quite a while ago. Rav Teitz from Elizabeth through Yeshiva University was involved. He was the Talmud of the Rugged Shaver, and he brought that sefer to publication. Lubavitcher Rebbe was also a Talmud of the Rugged Shaver to some extent, if I'm not mistaken. He had a lot of influence. But in order to read his Sfarim, the Sfarim al Torah, things like that, so you need footnotes, which the footnotes will tell you what's being referenced. So he just basically speaks in Marmar Komos, and he'll say something like, you know, so Tosfos and Menachos, but also Rashi and Baba Basra, but then on the other hand, there's Tosefta, so Teretz is Pasuk and Mishlei. Like, okay, that makes sense. So with the footnotes, you have a fighting chance. The footnotes, you can maybe figure it out. But, you know, without the footnotes, you're totally lost. So it's a little bit ironic. That's called the Tzofnas Paneach, when it's supposed to be revealing secrets, so more of a secretive style. But there's a lot you can gain if you put in the effort. And there are a number of Sfarim, most well-known is a sefer that Rav Kasher published called Mefaneach Tzifunos, written about the Derech of the Rugged Shaver. A lot that was studied and analyzed and has been written about his whole Derech. So it's another one of the titles that we find in these Psukim. So in addition to Yosef being called, that Rugged Shaver's name was Yosef Rosen, so that was a part of the idea here. So he got this name, it's called Tzofnas Paneach, and he's given Asnas Bas Potifera to marry. So that's interesting. So Paro's job is also to be a shadchan. Why is Paro involved in Shiduchim here? So there's Naim Latoru, Lutzgerav, he comments on this. So he suggests there are a couple of reasons why this was on Paro's agenda to marry him off here, if we assume that Bas Potifera is a reference to Potifar. So marrying him to the daughter of Potiphar has a couple of benefits. One is to defuse the idea that he would be viewed by Potiphar or anybody else as an Evid. Now, Potiphar is his father-in-law, so that's going to force him to see him differently. And also, it's a way to make a public statement that there wasn't any substance to any rumors about Yosef and the wife of Potiphar. As the Gemara in Yavamas indicates, a way to defuse suspicion. If one marries the daughter of a woman who he's accused of having a relationship with, it's going to defuse the suspicion. And also, so the nation will accept him. He's not an outsider anymore. He's got yichus, So they will see that he's somebody they should listen to. Now, the idea of Bas Potipharah, so here there's a lot to say about her actual history. The Midrashim comment that Ishus Potiphar, she actually had Shem Shamayim intent when she tried to seduce Yosef, because she had this vision that she would ultimately have children or descendants who would come through Yosef. So, if there was this Lashem Shamayim intent that she had, this Nayim Latorah comments that, quotes from his son, Mahalach here, that, so how much does intent matter? So, Tamar, in last week's parasha, so we give her a lot of credit for her Lashem Shamayim intent to continue the line of Yehuda, so she went this roundabout way to seduce someone in order to make that happen, and she's a big hero. And Ishus Potiphar is considered to be a big villain. So do we go by their intent, or do we not go by their intent? So he suggests there that anyone can claim good intent. That's the way the world works. Everyone claims that they have good motives for whatever they do. What really is going to indicate the truth is how do they react if their plans don't go as they hope. So here you see Tamar continues with her nobility. Tamar is ready to protect Yehuda's dignity, even at the possible cost of her life. While Ishus Potiphar, when she's thwarted, so she ends up trying to frame Yosef. And she ends up reacting very negatively. So anyone can claim noble motives, but the real proof is going to be, how do you actually act? How do you behave? And that's where we can discern what a person is really about. So there is a whole history here as to who exactly this woman was, this Asnas. So the Targum Yonasan conveys that she was actually the daughter of Dinah and Shem, from the whole incident with Shem and Parshas Vayishlach. So apparently there was a daughter that was produced from that, and that was this Asnas. And the Pirkei de Blazer quotes that because of the whole background, so Yaakov's sons actually wanted to kill her. They considered her existence to be a disgrace. So Yaakov himself protected her by putting a Shem Hashem around her neck and then sent her away. And that the Malach Michal had her brought down to Mitzrayim, where she ended up being adopted into this family. So there's a whole guiding of history here. But the idea that she was the daughter of Dinah is fascinating. It's brought down in some sefer, I forgot where I saw this, in one of the Sfarim, that it was a Badchan, these clowns who performed, jokers who performed at weddings and the like, who told a joke in front of Reb Chaim Kanievsky. I don't know whether he laughed or not, but he said that you could ask a kasha on last week's parsha, that when they count up all the stars and the moon and the sun, and supposed to represent Yaakov and Rachel and all the brothers, and Yaakov points out to Yosef that there's something missing here. It doesn't make sense because Rachel's not alive anymore, so it shows the whole thing doesn't work. So what about the fact that Dinah's not represented in this whole arrangement? So isn't that also a question on what's going on? So the Barchan explained that according to this tradition, Dinah was actually Yosef's mother-in-law. And there's no way, even in somebody's wildest dreams, that their mother-in-law would end up bowing down to them. So it could be all the older brothers and the parents, okay, maybe, but the mother-in-law, there's no way. So that's not even a dream. So that's the story that's attributed to this Barchan. Whether Chaim Kanievsky approved or not, we don't have a report on that. But, okay, so in any event, it's interesting also there are possible halachic ramifications to the idea that if she is indeed an adoptive daughter, basically she's really the daughter of Dinah and Shechem, and yet the Torah identifies here as Bas Potipharah, so there's a whole halachic discussion about whether one can use the name of an adoptive father on a get, or on a ksuba. It's a complicated discussion, but the Rishonim discussed this, the Ramban has a discussion about this in Parshas Pinchas also, because the Torah refers to Serach Bas Asher, also a well-known character of stories that's told about her. But the Ramban quotes a tradition from Unklus that actually she was not Usher's daughter. She was Usher's stepdaughter. She was the daughter of Usher's wife. So the fact that the Torah refers to her as Serach Bas Usher, and what exactly that represents as far as the halacha, whether that could be done or not, it's a big discussion. Chassam Sofer has a tshuva about this, and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky discusses it here, and a few other places. There's a lot to try to analyze about what exactly can be derived from that. Okay, so the pesukim continue. V'yosef mishloshim shana ba'amdol fnei paro malach Mitzrayim. V'yetzi Yosef mipei faro v'yavar b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. So here Yosef is 30 years old at this point, and he's given this tremendous power, and he goes out in front of the people of Mitzrayim, Batas Aretz, B'sheva Shnei HaSava, L'kmotzim. So in those years, the land did bring forth in clumps. V'yikbot says, Kol Ochel, Sheva Shanim, Asher Hayu Baretz Mitzrayim, Yitain Ochel Ba'arim, Ochel Stei Ha'ir, Asher Seha Nasim B'Sochi, gathered up all the food. And he collected all. V'yitzbar Yosef, that's also a sefer. V'yitzbar Yosef bar, k'chol hayom harbi ma'od, ad ki chadal l'spor came b'spar. So he gathered together all the grain, it was like the sand, until it was too much to count. Well, Yosef yulad shnei vanim, b'terem tavo shnas harav, ashe yolda lo asnas bas potifera kohenon. So this asnas woman, her whole history, whatever it is, so she gave birth to two sons, to Yosef, before the famine had kicked in. So the emphasis here, before the famine had kicked in, so the Gemara Masechus Tainis and Daf Yud Aleph, was Daf Yomi about 9 days ago, for those of you holding in Daf Yomi. So the Gemara Masechus Tainis and Daf Yud Aleph says in connection to this pasuk that Asur L'shamish Mitoso B'shas Ravon, that it's not proper for someone to engage in relations and to have children during a time of famine. So here the Torah is emphasizing that this happened before the famine. So Tosfos raises the question that, well, what about Yocheved, who was born to Levi in a time of famine, according to the Gemara and Zohar? So he suggests that maybe it means it's a midas chasidus, which doesn't mean that it's an actual issur, so it's possible that it could also happen. There's a whole discussion that Beis Otzer of Yosef Engel and his Sefer Beis Otzer has discussion in other Sfarim as well. We talk about whether the language Usser in the Gemara always means Usser. It sounds like it should, but there are contexts where it doesn't necessarily fit. So here, this is one of the contexts that's brought up in that discussion, that when it says Usser, sometimes it means a prohibition, sometimes it means that it's not a good idea, it's advice not to do so. So here it sounds like maybe it's not an absolute issue. The Bali Atosfos, in their commentary on the Chumash, they point out that perhaps only Yosef was aware that it was definitely a famine. Or also, maybe the question is, as far as the mitzvah of Puruvu is concerned. So if there's actual chiyuv of Puruvu, so that should override. So Levi maybe was of the opinion that you need to have a boy and a girl. That's the opinion of Beis Hillel that we paskin like. While Yosef held that two boys was enough. And therefore, that's the opinion of Beis Shammai. And therefore, he felt he was already Yotzei Puruvu. Tar Tamima has a comment here where he says that it's not really so much of a question, because the idea, this notion, especially you understand it not as an absolute iser, but kind of this general exhortation, this idea not to have children during a time of famine, it's not necessarily a prohibition per se, but it's saying that somebody who davka is not a part of the experience, he should still connect himself to the experience. So in order to join into the tzar of the tzibur, as Rashi has the phrase, it has to be no tzar on himself. So therefore, it was particularly relevant for Yosef that he should have this ideal. It wasn't necessarily relevant to Levi in the same time. That understanding is an interesting understanding. The Shuvas Mil Tzedaka thought it was for a different reason. He thought that it would affect the health of the children, that the children would be malnourished, and therefore that's the reason for the concern. Okay, so that's another possibility. So here, the Leah goes on to talk about, and to conclude, with the birth of these two children. Some who suggest they may have been twins, and that's where the singular language in the pasuk we just read, the Yosef Yulad Shnei Banim, maybe that's because they were indeed twins. But in any event, so still one is older. So the next two psukim talk about the names, and the names are challenging. The first really more than the second, but we'll just read together. It says Vayikra Yosef Eshem HaBechor Menashe, Kinashani Elokim Es Kalamali Veis Kol Beis Avi. So he named the first one Menashe. We'll come back to that whole description. Veis Shem Hasheni Kara Ephraim. Second one he called Ephraim. Ki Ephrani Elokim Baritzani. That God has caused me to be fruitful, like Puruvu. And indeed, if he does hold that Puruvu could be fulfilled with two sons, I guess that also works. So God has caused me to be fruitful here in this land of my affliction, so that's the name of Ephraim. But let's go back here to this name of Menashe. So that's a particularly surprising. So what is he so happy about here? And so God has made me forget all of my toil is kalamali, that's called Esavi, and to forget the household of my father. So that's it's hard to understand. What exactly is the message here? Exactly what I'm kind of.
Well, it's very painful. So, you know, it's sort of, it's easier to go on every day without having to, you know, have the pain of remembering, you know, I got kicked out of my father's house and I was in jail and it was all really horrible. Saying now I live a happy life and I don't feel so pained by what happened to me.
So that indeed is the interpretation some have, right? That it's a special chesed to not have to remember things that are hard, not have to remember things that cause suffering, that would be a gift, and that allowed him to be able to focus on what he had to do. I remember when I was a young child, I once said something to my father which at first impressed him very much. I said, wouldn't it be amazing if we could invent a machine that would allow people just to forget things? And he said, yeah, that would be incredible. People could save from all kinds of traumatic experiences, all kinds of suffering. And he was so impressed that at such a young age, I had thought of something that was so profound and so valuable. And then I went on to say that, yeah, if you had a machine like that, you could read mystery novels twice. And then you're like, oh, that's not what I was thinking about. So that was not as impressive. But maybe if I had been older and more sensitive, I realized that, okay, there's another value to being able to forget. So then to be relieved of trauma can certainly be a benefit. But also just practically, as perhaps you're indicating also, to be able to function. He's going to survive in Gullus, and he's going to be able to carry out these tasks. So maybe there is a need to be able to forget and to be able to endure. Schwab has a discussion about this in his Sefer, that it was an act of Rachmanis to help him forget. He wouldn't be able to endure otherwise. There is another approach to other suggestions. In the Sam Derech, for example, we mentioned before of Simcha Zussel Broich from Hebron, so in his Sefer Sam Derech, so he suggests that it's the ability to adapt to a new reality and to, so to speak, to forget the old ways. The Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Pehei says that when Ruzera came to Eretz Yisrael, he fasted that he should be able to forget the learning that he did in Babel. And that idea of wanting to forget and to be able to adapt to a new system in order to be able to change, in order to be able to grow, so you need to kind of forget your old ways. So too, here Yosef coming to Mitzrayim in order to be able to adapt to a new situation is going to have to be able to forget to a certain extent. There are other interpretations also. Some focus on the idea specifically of learning Torah, that he's talking about not remembering the Torah that he learned with his father, which of course is a challenging idea if that was true. So why is this something that he is happy about, apparently, and naming his son in order to convey that? And this is a topic which the Mefarshim discussed, the Netziv in particular, and to try to figure out just what's the background and what does it represent. The Netziv suggests that indeed Yosef was not really such a masmid, and he wasn't so much about learning, he was more about other things. And the Netziv writes that this was perhaps a chisaron in him, that he wasn't as involved in learning. Others suggest differently, that in the Matnas Kahuna, his commentary to Rashi, he writes that he actually was learning very hard, but still the situation was that he still forgot. He still didn't have the ability to remember all the details. The Chamuda Yitzchak, a sefer that recently came out, Al HaTorah, it's written by Rav Fuss, who's a son-in-law of Rav Salman Chaim Goldberg, quotes him often in his commentary. So he suggests along those lines that maybe the name is not meant to be a hodah as much as it's meant to be a reminder. Basically, he shouldn't forget that he was forgetting. And sometimes that's the best we can do. And you know, sometimes we don't have time to take notes or to write down what we want to remember, so we just want to at least remind ourselves that there's something to remember. Just to be aware that we shouldn't let things be totally forgotten. That if we at least are aware that we're forgetting, so that's a mila, over forgetting that there was even something in the first place. So maybe Yosef was setting a reminder to himself with this name that he was losing his hold on the Torah that he was given by his father, but at least he should keep that in the forefront of his consciousness so it should be remembered. And it's very noteworthy that the overall impact of what Yaakov taught Yosef certainly endured, and the Gemara in Sota says that that was what got him through the challenge with Eishes Potiphar. The Demus Diokno Shalaviv, the envisioning the visage of his father, was what kept him on the straight and narrow and allowed him to summon up his willpower and summon up his gevurah. So it's interesting that if it is true that he couldn't remember the content of the learning as well, but he certainly remembered the impact, forgetting who it was who said that your audiences won't necessarily remember what you told them, but they'll remember how you made them feel. So this could be an example of that, that here Yosef, even if he was not able to hold on to all of the details of his learning, certainly was able to hold on to the message, and that was what helped him to endure. But the different impressions that you get here from different commentaries about the picture of whether Yosef was working to try to remember, or maybe he was learning anew, but he couldn't remember what was originally taught, but he had to apply himself with a new vigor in order to try to rebuild what he had learned in his youth. It paints a very interesting picture of the different aspects of learning and what's involved. And happens to be, it's related to Hanukkah in a couple of ways, as we'll see. But Chassam Sofer has a comment about this whole notion of Yosef talking about forgetting and the idea that maybe there's some positive to forgetting. So the Chassam Sofer has a comment in his Chidushim to Masech HaShabbos and Daf Chof Aleph. What's going on in Shabbos Daf Chof Aleph? The Sugi of Hanukkah. Right, so in the middle of the Sugi of Hanukkah, so the Gemara there has a phrase, which is a well-known phrase outside of that Gemara. Gemara talks about the Girsa de Yankasa. The Gemara there relates that one of the Amoraim said that I wish I had known this earlier. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know it now, so why does it matter whether you knew it earlier or not? So the Gemara teaches us this concept of the Girsa de Yankasa, that which you learn in your youth tends to endure, tends to last longer. So you would have been better off had you learned earlier. So the Chassam Sofer comments, based on this and that, and contrasting the two, that Gemara over there praising the Gersa of the Ankasa, and here being told that there's some advantage to forgetting and having to work again to rebuild, that there are just two competing forces here, that there's also a notion, Af Chachmasi Amdali, Chazal say, Chachma Shalamanati Ba'af, that the Chachma that's acquired under very difficult situations, situations of frustration and anger, is umdali, is also able to endure and able to last. So it's two kind of competing forces. On the one hand, that which you are taught as a child when it's easy tends to last for a long time, but also that which comes through effort and through work is able to endure in a different way. And they both have their value, they both have their place, and perhaps that's a little bit what's being conveyed here And that's also a part of trying to create a total personality, trying to recognize that there is a great value that comes from putting your own effort into building your knowledge on your own and working to try to understand something through your own effort, and also having it been taught to you, in a sense, spoon-fed to you at an early age. We know that we have the Gemara Nida tells us that the baby in the womb is taught the entire Torah and then forgets it, which prompts the question of, so what's the value of all that learning if we're going to forget it? And Rav Soloveitchik expounded that the idea is that it's that gives us our yearning for Torah. The fact that we feel like we once had it and now it's slipping away, and there is a need to work hard in order to retrieve it, in order to get it back. And that's what pushes and creates that drive to learn more. So there's perhaps this mix that's being suggested here, that Yosef appreciates the fact that he had to work on his own at this later age to develop his own foundation in learning, while at the same time, of course, there is a gratitude and a recognition for the foundation that his father provided for him, even if the details are not as fresh and he had to put in his own effort in order to be able to rebuild it. And the whole notion of forgetting that comes from the pressures of life and the need to work against that is, of course, one of the themes of Hanukkah. And we spoke about it a little bit, I think, of Parshas Vayishlach a few weeks ago, because the related word there, Yigid HaNasha, and the idea that it invokes the same word, Nashani, and there are those who do indeed connect them, to represent the idea that the sorrow shall Esav was trying to make Yaakov forget, was trying to overwhelm him with distractions and all of the pressures of life so that he shouldn't remain focused and on mission. And there's some sources that suggest that it didn't work with Yaakov, but it was passed down to the next generation. So this impact of the effort to try to make him forget did indeed have an effect on Yosef, and that's what's being represented here. And that's what we say in Al Hanisim every day of this week, that the desire of the Yevanim was lahashkicham teresecha, was to overwhelm and to distract the Jewish people so that they should forget the Torah, so that it should become a relic of the past. And it's our continuing mission to do what we can to try to make sure that despite all of the pressures and the distractions and whatever may make us suffer, whatever may simply make us focus on all of the other attractions of the world, don't cause us to forget the Iker, don't cause us to lose sight of what it is that gives us meaning and gives us mission in the world. And even to the extent that it necessarily does, even to the reality that, yes, indeed, as we take on all the responsibilities of life and as we deal with all of the challenges, whether they are painful challenges or they are necessary challenges towards a positive end, which aren't necessarily so painful but are still distractions, one way or another, they do have an impact on our ability both to retain the details of our tradition as well as to remain focused and on mission. And it's our job to constantly remind ourselves and to remember that that's a risk and a reality, and that we have to devote ourselves all the more so to remembering that mission and to doing what we can to overcome that impact and overcome that effect. And that's a big part of what Hanukkah is, that we invoke this idea that l'hashgicham teresecha was the goal, and we should forget about our Mesorah, and we're so grateful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kept us around and kept our tradition around, kept our culture around, so that we will always be reminded of why we're here and what we're trying to do. And at a minimum, we can do like Yosef, and we can remember that there's what to remember, that we shouldn't forget that we're forgetting. We shouldn't forget that there is something that is there and present for us to hold on to and to reconnect to, and that even when we're in a strange land, even when we are in an environment that may bring whatever challenges it brings, a constant active effort to maintain that connection and to keep it at the forefront of our consciousness is necessary and, God willing, should be productive to make sure that we always are able not only to maintain the connection, but to expand and to grow and to thrive despite all of the challenges and the burdens and the distractions that are otherwise thrown at us. It's one of the major messages of Hanukkah. It's one of the major inspirations of Yosef HaTzadik, and it's one of the many lessons that he teaches us throughout these parashiyos, and perhaps this Aliyah specifically. Okay, so we will close there. I wish a question your own.
Yeah, two quick questions. First is, I feel like naming your kid that would be, if he's trying to like be thankful for forgetting it or not remembering, wouldn't naming when your kid's that do the opposite, and like every time you call his name or see him, it'd be like, there's the kid who I named after what I'm trying to forget.
Well, the question is also, what do you mean? It's a couple of different angles. You know, in order to make it make sense, you have to choose one path here and figure out, I guess, which one you're taking. But, you know, to the extent that it is a hodah, that it is some kind of a praise, so it could mean that I'm happy that I was able to focus on what I have to do now, and that I wasn't burdened by the trauma of having to focus on what was missing and where I've been taken from. So that isn't necessarily undermined by giving him that name. I should mention, in the mention before, there are some who say that the Al-Shech and the Ksava HaKabbalah have a whole other complicated interpretation here, that they suggest that Yosef was acknowledging, whether consciously or subconsciously, that he's grateful to God for keeping him on mission in a whole different way. That we have a tradition that this whole story had to unfold this way so that the plan of Jewish destiny could continue, that the Jews would be brought down to Mitzrayim in a dignified fashion rather than being taken in chains. And ultimately, Jewish destiny would play out as it had been prophesied. And Yosef appreciated that that was the plan. And had it not been for that, so he would never have let things get that far. That normal human reaction should have been, it's one of the major questions that's always asked about Yosef, that why didn't Yosef all these years make an effort to contact Yaakov and to tell him that he was alive and he shouldn't be suffering so much? So this is a major question, which there are many, many different approaches to. But the path that the Al-Shech and differently the Ksava Kabbalah are suggesting here is that it was necessary that Yosef should keep Yaakov in the dark for history to unfold along the lines of God's plan. So basically, Yosef had to sacrifice the tremendous emotional and filial responsibility that he would have to show the basic concern for his father's suffering, which under normal circumstances, no question, he would have reacted very differently. So in order to be able to allow God's plan to be carried out, and to sacrifice his personal needs for the goals of destiny, so that required forgetting also, required being able to either actually forget or not focus on what he normally would have done under these circumstances, so that the situation could develop the way that it was meant to. It was a very elaborate interpretation of what's going on here. So you see there's so many different ways suggested to understand, is this a expression of thanks? If so, what is it thanks for? Or maybe itself, it's an acknowledgement, which is also something important to understand, that when we have brachos, for example, so brachos are sometimes expressions of gratitude for that thing, but sometimes they are acknowledgements of God in recognition of a certain reality, whether it means that reality is good or bad or somewhere in between. That you praise God in the context of recognizing that reality. So to hear, the name doesn't necessarily have to be an expression of happiness. It can be a reminder or a memorial for whatever purpose. But also this idea, which I think has a certain ring to it as well, that it's a way of maintaining consciousness, and it's a way of maintaining an awareness. And it's also noteworthy that when names are given after relatives, so the whole question of what's the purpose naming a child after, say, an Ashkenazi practice, after a deceased relative. So it's a way, you know, there are those who have very Kabbalistic understandings toward it, very supernatural understanding, but on a more basic level, it's a way of keeping the memory of that individual alive, and therefore, yes, honoring that person, but also inspiring the next generation that there should be a continuation and there should be a memory of what's going on. And that's something which is itself very, very powerful, and something which has both a simple celebratory end, but also just a very practical, inspirational purpose, which is not necessarily in the same category. Yeah.
For those who focus on, like, him forgetting, like, the trauma, like, in his home, just from that words in the Pasuk, it seems like there's two things. There's the, like, Amali, and then there's Ve'ed Kobe Beit Avi, which would imply that it would be more, like, I don't understand how they're reading.
Well, so that's the thing, right? You're saying that if he just says, all my toil, if that's what it means, well, we could hear that. Okay, so I'm not focused on the suffering, I'm not focused on everything that's been negative. But the language, Kol Beis Avi, it sounds like he's saying he's happy that he forgot his father's house. So I think that's what you're saying. It's harder to understand why that should be.
That's still true.
So that's a part of it, right? So the question, that's why it yields so many different interpretations. Is it that itself would be painful? Or is it that it's connected to all these more elaborate interpretations that he needed to forget that as well in order to be able to progress, or in order to be able to, in a more elaborate way, bring about the divine plan.
Yeah. Related to the idea of this, what Rabbi just mentioned earlier about the interpretation of this is him thanking Hashem for allowing him to fulfill the divine plan by being there. How does that make sense then? How would they stand that with later on when he does reveal who he is to his brothers? We have just seen that is part of the divine plan to get them down there then?
Yeah, once they're there already, so then, you know, it's already been accomplished. But it's also interesting to mention another element to this. You know, we talk about being able to forget the past in a positive way so that you can progress with the new needs of the situation in front of you and to be able to adapt. So there are some who suggest here as well that here the brothers, you recall, that they did what they did because they had some kind of a calculation. They figured that they were justified in trying to get rid of Yosef, and to be able to have a new stage, to be able to reconcile, which is itself a whole fascinating discussion of what exactly happened there. It's a topic for next week's parasha and even the parasha after, but the whole question of what ultimately happens with Yosef and his brothers coming back together. So in order for that to happen, there has to be some mix between remembering and forgetting, which is itself important insight into human relationships, that in order to get past it, there needs some need to deal with what has happened, which requires some degree of remembering. But you also have to be able to forget, which doesn't only mean to forgive, or it doesn't necessarily even connect to forgiving, but it means to be able to see things differently. So forgetting, not in terms of forgetting events, but forgetting thought patterns. So it's one party or both are going to have to be able to relearn how to relate to each other, and that requires forgetting. That requires being able to see things in a new way, which you can't do if you're still saddled with the burden of how you used to see things. So to be able to prepare for a new stage of life and to say, okay, I was able to forget where I was before, is itself very crucial. Okay, yeah.
I want to quickly just ask, where are the sources for the idea that we learn Torah Kula in the womb and then forget?
It's the Gemara and Nida. Yeah. All right. I'm Shikar. So, Olah Dav Mincha.